Listening to your body. What does that actually mean? I used to get so annoyed with like people on Instagram, just listen to your body. And I'd be like, what the fuck do you even mean by that? What are you talking about? Like, I am listening to my body. I feel everything. What do you mean? Okay. When our experiences of sensations and symptoms is uncomfortable, painful, anxiety inducing, it's only natural to want to retract away from that, to disconnect. And we learn to disconnect from our bodies and we retreat into our minds and we think we're going to think our way out of our feelings. That seems like it makes sense, except it doesn't work. Dr. Russ Kennedy, the anxiety MD, says you can't think your way out of a feeling problem, which I really love. But that's often what we try to do with anxiety is we're trying to think our way out of something that we're actually feeling in our bodies. So our cognitively driven culture also reinforces disconnection from our bodies because it praises intellectualism and reason over felt sense. And so we are collectively disembodied people. We learn to feel, and when we learn to feel and notice sensation with curiosity instead of fear, we are listening to our bodies. So, as you know about the nervous system, it's responsible for all the sensation that happens in your body. That sensation are electrical signals that are traveling up and down the nervous system. Some sensations alert us to take care of our basic needs. So, like if you can feel the sensation that you would describe as hunger, that is a message from your body that's saying, hey, we're running low on energy. It's time for some calories. It's time to raise our blood sugar, eat some food, and you eat food. When you have the sensation of what you would call thirst, then that's your body going, hey, I might be a little bit dehydrated. I need some water. When you have the sensation that you would say is sleepy, that's your body going, hey, it's time to go to sleep, right? I have this need for sleep. Please meet this need for sleep. I'm giving you this cue so that you know that it's time for me to sleep. So it's important that we can listen to our bodies just to feel these basic things like hunger, thirst, sleepiness. When you need to pee, that's another one, right? It's a sensation that makes you go, oh, hey, I need to stop what I'm doing and I need to go pee. It's important that we can hear those sensations from our bodies and meet our basic needs in that way. But some sensations are connected to our emotions. So, like, you might associate your face flushing red with feeling humiliated. You might associate a lump in your throat with anxiety about public speaking or a fear of speaking up for yourself or setting a boundary. You might associate tension in your neck with feeling stressed about an upcoming deadline or an upcoming project or something like that. So, sensations can also be like the body is going, hey, there's some fear here, or there's some anxiety, or there's some anger, or there's some sadness, or whatever. So, interoception is one of our senses. We actually have eight senses, not just five. So we have sight, sound, smell, touch, and taste. We also have our proprioceptive sense, our vestibular sense, and our interoceptive sense. So interoception is the sense of noticing and feeling sensation in your body. So whenever you notice the sensation of hunger or thirst or needing to pee or sleepiness, you are using your interoception, your sense of noticing and feeling what's happening inside your body. So, sensation is how the body speaks. Interoception is how we listen. But the trap of the mind and the ego is to assign meaning to the sensation, to create stories about it, to pathologize certain sensations, to make them bad. And when we believe the mind-made stories, especially if we aren't in awareness of those stories, we can become afraid of feeling the sensation, or we attach a meaning to the sensation, and then we have fear about the meaning we've attached to the sensation. Before we begin reestablishing this connection with our bodies, I think it's really crucial that we understand why the connection was severed in the first place. So, when our needs for connection, love, and secure attachment were not met by our parents, we did not have the consciousness, the cognitive or developmental capability to realize that that disconnection was not our fault. It can never be the child's fault. So we internalized the disconnection and the lack of secure attachment as a fundamental flaw within ourselves. Then, as we grew up, our egos developed, the voice or voices in our heads, the parts that worry and keep us ruminating and overthinking. They keep us trying to figure out why and what's wrong with us. Mind chatter, is the ego's way of trying to protect us by telling stories that match the state of our nervous system. There is a widely known principle about the nervous system that story follows state. So if you're feeling a certain state in your body and you have a story about it, the story is almost always reflective of that state in your body because story follows state. But story is not always accurate. It's not always factually true. The story is constantly confirming what we feel, but are too afraid to feel. So it confirms, oh, I'm so anxious. I'm so anxious about everything. But you're not actually being present with the anxiety. Or, oh, I'm so sad. I'm so angry. I'm grieving, whatever else. Oh. But you're not actually stopping to be present with the anger or the grief or the anxiety or the sadness. So reconnecting with our bodies is a practice of noticing the voice in our head and the stories that it's telling and dropping into the body to notice what sensations are present without believing the ego stories first. So we connect to the body over and over until we are walking around in our bodies and not in our heads. And that's what it means to be embodied. You are in your body. You're feeling whatever's present. You're allowing the sensations, even and especially when they're uncomfortable. You feel, you allow, you stay present with whatever's there. That's embodiment. If there's movement on top of it, great. Because sometimes our emotions are like, hey, let's move. Let's like shake this anxiety out, or let's cry this grief out, or let's do some push-ups or some squats to metabolize this anger. So while we feel and allow and stay present, we also notice the stories of the voices in our heads with curiosity. We get curious instead of believing them as fact or truth. We notice how those thoughts feed the sensations of the body, perhaps even intensifying the sensation. If the sensation feels contracted and really uncomfortable, we can offer breath to those places. Also, you guys know, I encourage you to place a hand on the part of your body where you're noticing the sensation to hold yourself in that fear and discomfort and repeat, 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 repeat. The knowing eventually comes. Eventually, with enough of this practice, you will begin to understand cognitively and translate cognitively what the somatic message of your body is. You will not do this 100% perfectly. I still have sensations sometimes that I'm like, I have no fucking clue where this is coming from. But most of the time, I'm able to discern what message the sensation of my body is sending me and then take action on that if I need to. Without conscious awareness, our only option is to be unconscious of the mind stories, which results in more fear, catastrophization, hypervigilance, and more dissociation from our bodies. So when it comes to our triggers, the mind can tell stories like, oh, I could never face that. It's too painful. Or I've always avoided that. It's just the way I am. So the mind is telling the story that the body is a painful, uncomfortable place to be. The mind may even have a story that your body has betrayed you. I used to feel that way about my body. Like, fuck, I've given you all this expensive organic food and all these fucking supplements, and you're still doing this. Like, I used to feel that way towards my body. Believing those stories or not being conscious of them forces us into not being embodied, disembodiment. When we're disembodied, we're disconnected from the body. We're living in our minds, in our heads all the time. We're thinking and thinking and thinking and thinking, but we're not feeling. So, connecting with the body requires being willing to notice and feel the sensations of the body while also noticing the stories of the mind with curiosity instead of judgment or unquestioning belief. And with practice, we can learn to notice sensation, feel it, and then cognitively describe it with language. Our bodies don't speak with cognitive language, right? The language of our bodies is sensation and sometimes symptoms. Interoception is how we listen. We can talk back to our bodies through presence, holding ourselves, meeting our basic needs, and doing nervous system hygiene. Those are all ways to connect with the body and to talk back. When you do something like nervous system hygiene, you are sending a message of safety to your body. You're saying, hey, it's safe. It's safe to downshift. It's safe to just be present. It's safe to slow down. If you have a sensation or symptom that's concerning to you, it is okay to get it checked out by your doctor. I recommend getting it checked out. But if everything checks out medically okay, the sensation or symptom is probably your body speaking to you and you're interocepting it and attaching a story to it. such as, oh, this must be really bad. I'm sure something is really wrong with me. What if it's a mystery illness and no doctor ever figures it out? What if I feel this forever? What if, what if, what if, what if, what if? Sensations and symptoms are sometimes really uncomfortable, and it's natural to want to avoid discomfort or make it go away, but it's unrealistic. As long as we're alive in our human body on this earth, sensation and symptoms are going to be part of our existence. So, what if instead of avoiding our bodies and judging our bodies, we learn to listen and not be afraid of what we feel, even when it's really uncomfortable? Trusting that if it is an actual emergency or we do need medical help or there is something wrong, that we will know and we will go seek the help that we need, but that we don't have to force that to happen. So, let's talking about overcoming health anxiety. It's not about getting rid of your symptoms. Just like you're not going to heal your money anxiety by having no money or by having more money, and you're not going to heal your relationship anxiety just by having a perfect relationship. So, can you hold painful, uncomfortable sensations without reactivity? If not, that's something that you can work towards. Can you change the energy with which you approach healthcare? Can it be less reactive and more responsive? Can it be slowed down? Can it be more open and less closed off? More expansive and less contracted? Can you slow down, reduce your urgency and panic, and get more calm and grounded? Can you accept and surrender and stop resisting whatever is present in your body? Are you able to be present and curious with the voice in your head? And maybe most importantly, are you reorienting your relationship to your body toward pleasure instead of pain? So, you guys know this process. We've gone over it multiple times. We're having awareness and curiosity about typical health anxiety coping behaviors. We replace those coping mechanisms with conscious nervous system hygiene and connect with our body in ways that build trust. We have awareness and curiosity about the voices in our heads. We track sensations and symptoms, and we track the fear or the story. And then we reorient to pleasure-focused body connection. It's normal that you don't want to orient towards pain, but you can orient towards pleasure. So, bringing some awareness and curiosity about our typical health anxiety coping mechanisms. So, for example, if you're a Googler, what purpose is this serving for me? If you're seeking certainty in Facebook groups and trying to consume more information on Instagram, what purpose is this serving for me? If your health is a frequent topic of conversation, what is that doing for you, really? Right? Just gaining awareness of like what's underneath this behavior. So we can replace unconscious coping mechanisms like Googling or constantly talking about our health or catastrophizing or whatever with conscious nervous system hygiene and other self-trust building coping skills. So for my clients who have health anxiety, here is what I encourage them to do first and foremost. I ask them to implement a no Google policy. We're going to stop Googling. We're going to quit Googling cold turkey if we have to. And replace the Googling with some nervous system hygiene, some EFT, some somatic listening, going outside, breath work, some type of pleasure. So, like when the urge is there, like my phone's here. Oh, there's a sensation. Oh, no, I want to Google. I want to pick up my phone. It's like, no, because I know that doesn't ever get me what I want. It never gives me the certainty I'm seeking. I almost never get an answer for what I need. That's not the way I want to go. Instead, I'm going to go do this breathwork practice instead. I'm going to go crawl around on the floor and stretch instead. Also, encourage my clients with health anxiety to leave Facebook groups or unfollow Instagram accounts that activate more health anxiety or that cause them to do more Googling, and then replace that with a safe person or two who you can share with when you're feeling unsafe in your body and they can provide you co-regulation. What you're really needing when you're going into those Facebook groups and Instagram accounts, what you're actually seeking is co-regulation. Like you're saying, I want another person who knows what I'm experiencing and who's at where I'm at that I can come alongside me or that I can feel like I'm less alone in this journey. You're seeking co-regulation, but you're never going to get it from a Facebook group or an Instagram account. Instead, actually go to a source that can give you real co-regulation, like a safe, trusted friend or a partner. If talking about your health issues is one way you attempt to have certainty, answers, control, etc., Can you notice when you're trying to like talk about a health issue and replace it with boundaries with yourself and others regarding conversations and questions about health? So, for instance, I know a lot of people with chronic illness, their friends and families also know that they have chronic illness. And so, whenever their friends or family come over, then friends and family are like, "How are you feeling? Right? How are you feeling? How's your Lymes? How's your chronic fatigue? How's your autoimmune illness? How are you feeling? How are you doing?" And then that gives us an opportunity to talk about the health issue even more. So that gives us an opportunity to be like, "Well, I've tried this new doctor. I'm starting this new diet. I'm starting this new medication." And it gives us a way to talk about our health. And sometimes talking about our health is a way to focus on it because that feels safe and comfortable and familiar. So you have to have boundaries with yourself and also boundaries with others. And you can act like I have a friend, Mark, who has severe chronic Lyme disease. He's had it for over 20 years. And when he and I first became friends, I asked him almost every time I saw him, like, "How are you feeling? Did your new treatment work? Did the new antibiotic work? How are you feeling? How are you feeling?" And eventually he was like, "Hey, can you stop asking me how I'm feeling? I really don't want my health to be a focal point of our conversations." And I was like, "Yeah, okay, I can do that." Because he's trying not to like make his health the focus. He wants the relationship to be the focus. He wants fun to be the focus. If frequently checking in with your body is a way that you try to maintain control or certainty or staying ahead of your symptoms, can you replace that with the awareness of checking in? And then maybe a helpful mantra that's like, "Okay, you're feeling that sensation again." So like in my example of like pelvic pain, it's like, "Okay, I'm feeling this pelvic pain again. There it is. This is what's happening. I'm okay right now. Like, maybe this isn't comfortable, but I'm okay. Try it." And if you have a belief that you have to limit what you do because that's going to cause a symptom, or with certain symptoms, you can't do what you want to do, okay, even though this is uncomfortable, I'm okay. I could still go for a walk. I could still stretch. I could still go to yoga class. You know? You're going to fall back into old unconscious coping strategies. You will. You will Google again. You will probably return to the Facebook group in a moment of desperation. You have not failed if you do these things. Just remind yourself, I'm learning. This is a deeply ingrained pattern of anxiety and certainty seeking that I am finding my way out of. It makes sense that I do these things when I'm feeling unsafe. At any time, I can consciously choose to redirect myself, right? You are an adult with agency and power. At any time, you can put your phone down and redirect to something else. At any time, you can stop focusing on the painful symptoms and redirect to something else. You have the power to do that. The voice in your head gets off on shaming you as a failure or saying you're never going to heal when you go back into those unconscious patterns. Oh, you Googled again. See, you're still doing it. You're not over it yet. No real or lasting change comes from a place of shame. You are not going to shame yourself out of any kind of anxiety, relationship, health, financial, otherwise. You can, however, love yourself through those things. You can, however, trust yourself even if you are experiencing anxiety. Just bring awareness to the shaming critical voice in your head. Notice it curiously. You don't have to listen to it or believe it. So we judge because we're attached. We're attached to a story, a belief, an outcome, an identity, a diagnosis. We're attached to something. Unless we're aware of the attachments and judgments and we can meet those attachments with non-judgmental, neutral curiosity, we're going to continue to stay in these patterns and that will keep us stuck. The stories that we're telling ourselves about the things are usually much more harmful than the things themselves. And when I say the things, I'm talking about the symptom, the sensation, the trigger, the appointment, the feeling, the emotion, whatever. The voices are tricky because they're believable. And all of us have some life experience that proves that what the voice says might actually be true. And this is why awareness is a non-negotiable. We have to be aware of these voices before we can question or challenge them. So, awareness and curiosity about the voice in your head. Curiosity is the antidote to judgment. Isn't it interesting that the voice in my head is saying this? What meaning am I making out of this sensation or this symptom? Is this sensation or symptom actually a problem? Is the amount in my bank account actually a problem? Is the amount of time I'm spending or not spending with my kids actually a problem? Is how I'm feeling in my marriage right now actually a problem? Or is the voice in my head scared and trying to convince me there's a problem? Can I be open to the possibility that this sensation isn't an indication of a problem in my physiology, but is instead my body speaking to me about some unfelt emotions? As you know, these voices in your head are not bad or wrong. They're part of you. They're allowed to be there. They just can't be allowed to take over because when they do, then we're really reactive. That's your higher self's job. We can't reject or get rid of the voices as much as we might want to. We're also not a victim to the voices. You're not a victim of health anxiety or relationship anxiety or money anxiety or parenting anxiety or anything else. And you may not have had awareness of the voices in your head around certain things until now, and that's also okay. So I need to change this slide to say somatic listening because it's not really tracking anymore because I've added a bunch of stuff. But with health anxiety, the voice in your head is always telling a story of fear. And usually with any kind of anxiety, the voice in your head is telling a story of fear. With health anxiety in particular, a fear of death, a fear of suffering, a fear of loss of life or loss of quality of life or loss of ability. Fear that the condition is incurable, fear of aging, fear of the healing journey that you might have to go through, fear of being a burden to other people, fear of being alone in your condition, fear of pain, fear of mystery illnesses. So, somatic listening for health anxiety is we are feeling the actual sensation and symptom with complete presence and non-reactivity, and we're feeling the fear because the voice in our head creates stories and makes meaning out of the sensations and symptoms. Okay. So, like you can notice, let's say you have like a feeling in your stomach that's like familiar and something that causes you a lot of anxiety. You can notice the sensation in your stomach, and you can also notice the fear that you have about the sensation in your stomach. And you can notice the story that the voice in your head is telling you about the sensation in your stomach. With somatic tracking, which again, I probably need to change this because I do a little bit differently now than what Alan does in The Way Out. But I still recommend the book, especially if you struggle with chronic pain. I absolutely recommend his book, The Way Out. He says we are paying attention on purpose in the present moment, non-judgmentally. So the goal of somatic listening or tracking is to be present with sensation without fear. And that might be hard if you've lived in fear of a sensation for a long time, or if you have big stories attached to that sensation. Then we send messages of safety to the brain and body. Holding ourselves is a message of safety to our brain and body. Okay. Even if words don't feel authentic to you, just being present and holding yourself is sending a message of safety to your body. If it feels authentic, you can say things like, it's safe to feel the sensations of my body. My body is not against me. This is a completely safe sensation. Even if I'm afraid of this, I can still feel this and be okay. Alan calls this safety reappraisal, and it has been proven to significantly decrease fear when we can be present with a fearful sensation, but be non-reactive to it and send ourselves messages of safety. So you guys have done this before. Let's do it now. Let's practice it in real time. If it helps you to close your eyes so that you can be completely present with your body to feel, great. If not, just hold a soft gaze in front of you or at the floor, or close your eyes. Get comfortable. Imagine going on a journey through your body right now. If you're old enough to remember Miss Frizzle and the Magic School Bus. Miss Frizzle and the fourth grade class are taking a trip in the magic school bus through your body. And when they find a sensation in your body, the bus is going to pull over and park. The kids are going to get out of the bus and they're going to explore that sensation curiously. The sensation can be as minor or as major. As whatever it is that you're feeling, it doesn't matter. How would you describe the sensation? If there's kids that are pulled over and they've gotten off a bus and they're on a field trip to explore this sensation, imagine that they're like climbing on this sensation or they're walking around it or running around it. How would they describe the sensation? Is it hot? Is it cold? Does it tingle? Does it pulse? Does it throb? Is it painful? Is it tense? Maybe you see it as a certain color or a shape. Is it moving? Is it still? Notice how I'm not using words like I feel angry or I feel disappointed or I feel sad. I'm just using descriptive words, hot, cold, pulsing, tingling, sharp, hollow, empty, blue. Place your hand on that part of your body where you feel the sensation. Imagine that there is love, acceptance, forgiveness going from your hand to this part of your body. Doesn't matter how minor or major the sensation is, all sensations deserve our presence, our curiosity, and our love. If this sensation feels uncomfortable to you, try the practice of sending a message of safety in addition to holding your hand there. It's safe for me to feel this. My body's not against me. She's just communicating to me. Don't have to fix anything. I only am here to listen. What happens to this sensation as you stay present with it? Does it shift, change, intensify, subside? Does it move to a totally different part of your body? Does it change colors? Is the sensation different? Whatever happens is okay. Just let it do its thing. All you have to do is notice. Notice if you have resistance to feeling what you're feeling. Notice if you're watching the sensation like a hawk. Are you really vigilant about it? Do you feel like you have to just keep your eye on it so that it doesn't trick you? Or can you watch it with a more relaxed, as if you're like floating in the ocean with a snorkel, just looking at the fish underneath you instead of like a hawk? You can pay attention to this sensation as if it's a colorful sunset, or as if you're lying in a field and watching the clouds drift overhead. You're observing, but with curiosity and effortlessness. You're not exerting effort to observe. Notice if there's a part of you that's like, I hope if I'm present with this long enough, I can just get rid of it. That's not why we're listening. We're just listening to notice and feel curiously, not to get rid of or fix anything. Would anyone like to share what they noticed as they listened? We have time for a couple people to turn your mics on and share if you'd like. Then we'll talk about pleasure, which is super fun. Anybody want to share what you noticed or experienced? I will call on you if you don't volunteer. Nicole, I'm going to call on you.
Okay. I initially noticed sensation in my throat. This is an often occurrence. This is definitely concentrated in my throat. There's like a tightness, there's a heaviness, but there's also this feeling of like a dryness, almost like cotton balls like shoved down my throat. And then just staying with it, it would kind of come in and out where there'd be almost like a little bit of space between, like a little bit of airflow between all of that cotton. And then I could just also just feel my actual pulse, like when I put my hand here too.
Did you discern any kind of message from your body about that sensation?
I've had an awareness for a long time that I think a lot of the sensation that appears in my throat is connected to like my actual physical voice. So that's something I've been aware of and like working towards, but it is definitely like I can feel a little bit of that like feeling of like, is this work ever going to be done? You know, that this is just such
Oh.
a it feels like because I have had an awareness for it, and I have strengthened my voice in a lot of, you know, areas of life, but like still, I'm still constantly drawn to this place in my body.
Yeah. Good work. Was that easy?
It wasn't like hard. It's just more of a, I think this just kind of feeling of that, like, here again, you know, like, so it's not like it's hard for me to direct my energy there, but it's just kind of like, this kind of repetitive feeling that I often go through.
And what part of you is that?
Oh, that's my mind for sure.
Is that a kid on the bus? It's like, oh, fuck, I don't want to do it again. This is so repetitive. This is so dumb that I have to keep doing this. What kid is that for you? Who doesn't like to repeat things? Who doesn't like the practice of something? Who just wants the result?
I think it's like the one that's like it's not that not interested in doing the work, but it's like after some amount of energy has been expended. It was like the same thing when I tried to play guitar for the first time, you know, it was like, well, I should see progress at some point, you know, like if you are putting in the time, if you're putting in the energy, like where at what point can you play the song? You know, like that kind of feeling.
Yeah. So it's like results focused.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
So
'cause I'm not super like driven, like outcome person, like in a lot of ways, but like, yeah, there.
Yeah, that's interesting. Thank you for sharing. Anyone else want to volunteer? I'm gonna call in one more person. Hey, Katarina, I'm calling on you.
Okay, what I noticed throughout the whole workshop and also the practice is the trickiness of the voice in my head. For example, when I try to send safety to my body, like, okay, I'm safe to feel this, then immediately the voice was going, oh no, you're unsafe. Oh,
Nice.
that, yeah. And so, or for example, with the ACEs score, my amount is a little bit higher. So the voice was saying, oh, you're screwed. So Lindsay said that there are studies that these people may have health issues when they're in adulthood. So you may die earlier. So, and constantly obsessing about that.
Okay. And what did you notice with the sensation as you were present with it? Did it intensify, subside, move to a different part of your body?
It was a little bit overwhelming and a little bit confusing. I was a little bit distracted, so but yeah, it was a little bit less intense in the end. But not that easy to be with it without distracting or fixing in my mind and going to other places.
So interesting to experience that in like real time and slowed way down, right? Like super slowed down. Does that feel like a practice you can return to and try again?
Yeah, totally.
Okay, awesome. Thanks for sharing, y'all. All right, let's go back. All right, now we get to talk about my most favorite part of this entire workshop, which is pleasure. All right, so remember, we live in a symptom-focused society. We do all of these things to fix or get rid of or focus on or relieve or micromanage our bodies, right? Have you ever thought about like, okay, well, if we have to be this focused on our symptoms and rate them on a scale of 1 to 10 and keep a log of what we eat and does that correlate with a symptom we experience and taking a drug for a symptom or taking a supplement for a symptom. Like, what if we were doing the same things with pleasure? What if we were like keeping a log of all the ways that we sought out pleasure and how they felt? What if we were rating what we experienced on a scale of 1 to 10 of pleasure? What if we were trying to find ways to experience more pleasure in life? So, if our relationship with our bodies is a painful one, it makes total sense why we dissociate from our bodies and we just become really attached to the voice in our head. Our brains and our nervous systems are not dumb. Dissociating, retreating into your head, or numbing out, either way, is protection. Except in this instance of your own sensation, your brain and your nervous system are protecting you from your own self, because the sensations are dysregulating or painful or whatever, especially if there's a story attached to them. So think of what would be different in your life if your relationship with your body wasn't only based in pain, right? And I'm not just talking about physical pain and symptoms. I'm also talking about the pain of anxiety or of grief or of depression. What would your relationship to your body be then if there was just as much, if not more, focus on pleasure as there is pain? Do you think that a pleasure-based relationship with your body is as dysregulating or threatening to your brain and nervous system as all of the pain that you're experiencing? Maybe the idea of this is like not something you can wrap your head around right now, and that's okay. Could you be open to the possibility that your relationship with your body could be based in pleasure, or at least open to the possibility that you could have room for pleasure alongside pain? Can they both coexist? Your resistance may be showing up as objections, but what if I have a diagnosed condition that's really painful? But what if I have chronic pain and fatigue? What if I'm actually anxious or depressed? What if I'm disabled? What if I have an autoimmune illness or other health condition? Like, yes, all of your but what ifs are valid, but even if you have a diagnosed condition that's painful, you can still access pleasure. Even if you have chronic pain or fatigue, even if you're anxious or depressed, even if you're disabled, even if you have an autoimmune illness or another health condition, you can still experience pleasure. It's not impossible. You are not cut off from experiencing good things just because you have some pain happening in your life. You can still enjoy how a massage or a foot rub feels, even if you are in pain, even if you're anxious. You can still enjoy the sensation of slowly rubbing lotion on your hands or another part of your body and just like slowing down and being really present with that. You can still enjoy the scent of your coffee or your tea as you sip it slowly. You can still give yourself an extra 5 minutes in a hot shower. You can still admire a sunrise or a sunset. You can still enjoy the softness of a sheepskin rug. If you need to a place to enjoy the softness of a sheepskin rug, I have many in my house. So you can just come over here and lay all over my sheepskin rug. You can still give yourself the tingles when you brush your hair, right? Or have someone else brush your hair for you. Like, you can still access all of these points of pleasure, even if you have chronic pain, even if you're depressed, even if you're anxious, even if you have an autoimmune illness, even if you have chronic fatigue. These things are all still accessible to you. But you have to choose it, right? And a lot of times our unconscious stories keep us so focused on the pain, on the problem, on the symptom, that it leaves our awareness that we have access to this like realm of pleasure, and that that can still be there. That thing can still exist. And also, I can still experience pleasure, and I can reorient myself to pleasure instead of constantly being oriented to my pain. Focusing on pain, again, physical or emotional pain, is dysregulating to the nervous system. It elevates cortisol, which is a stress hormone, which leads to inflammation, also leads to a weaker immune system, sleep issues, imbalances in insulin, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, and weight gain. Like, all of these things can happen with elevated cortisol, and cortisol only elevates when we're stressed. If we're always focusing on what's wrong with us, we are always, to some degree, in a level of stress, whether it's low or high. Orienting to pleasure, however, reduces dysregulation. And when dysregulation is reduced, we're not under as much stress. So our stress hormones start going down. When the stress hormones go back down to a normal state, the body can return to allostasis and then homeostasis because the nervous system is not signaling to the adrenal glands anymore to pump out cortisol and adrenaline. Why? Because we reoriented to pleasure. So when stress hormones are lower, inflammation goes down, immune function increases, hormones balance, blood sugar balances, weight balance, sleep and digestion improve. All of these things happen whenever we reduce stress in our lives and lower cortisol and stress hormones, which we can do through pleasure. Now, again, that doesn't mean that you might not still need help with blood sugar regulation or hormone balance. I'm a person right here who's using thyroid hormone and bioidentical progesterone. So, like, I am in no way saying that just because you reorient to pleasure, that that means you don't need support in other ways with your health, right? But you can get that support and you can still orient to pleasure. Please do not underestimate or think that simple acts of pleasure done slowly and consistently can't or won't heal you. This is what will heal you. Like, a pleasure practice is a really important piece, especially for women in our healing journey. We need to remain in awareness of our patterns of focusing on pain and symptoms while neglecting pleasure and reorient. We can consciously choose pleasure. Our nervous systems and our stress hormones get a break when we do that, and the cumulative effect of that over time cannot be underestimated. So let's take a deep breath and bring something into our conscious awareness that exists for all of us, but maybe we've never made conscious before. I've been conditioned to focus on symptoms and pain and to fear the sensations of my body. There it is. I have been conditioned to focus on my bank account and fear whatever number is in it. I have been conditioned to focus on everything that's wrong in my relationship by looking at other people's relationships that I think are perfect and projecting that onto my relationship and then thinking that my relationship comes up short. Now that you know that fear of being in your body and feeling sensation is something we've all been conditioned out of, and that orienting to pleasure is something we've all been conditioned out of, can you be even more open to the possibility that your relationship with your body could include pleasure along with pain, and that you can choose pleasure? It is literally a choice, and you have agency and adult money, and you can choose pleasure for yourself. Both are possible and they can coexist. It's not either or, it's not a binary. So, I don't know how anyone can have a diagnosed mental illness like health anxiety disorder when the entities that conditioned us to focus on what feels bad are the same entities that keep trying to sell us the means by which to fix what feels bad. That is not something that's wrong with you, that is something that is wrong systemically. And without awareness, we will fall into that trap every single time. We've all been conditioned to focus on what feels bad, so we don't know how to focus on what feels good. But with awareness, we can choose to invite in more pleasure, to prioritize and make time for pleasure, to find new ways to experience pleasure, to go as deep into pleasure as we go into our pain, to reconnect with our bodies through pleasure instead of pain. That's the whole reason I started sensual movement and pole. It was a way for me to reconnect with my body through something that felt pleasurable instead of personal growth and healing something all the time. Like, no, fuck that. I'm just gonna get in my body and move around a pole and that feels good, you know? Like, it's that simple, really. Like, lay on a blanket in the sun in your yard. Do it with the intention of I am going to experience all the pleasure that I can experience from laying on a blanket in the sun in my yard. So, if the unconscious choice, if what you've been conditioned to do is to focus on your symptoms, catastrophize about them, diagnose them, hop from practitioner to practitioner, and medicate them, what if instead we take the awareness of all of this and we choose to focus more on pleasure? The pain is still allowed to be there. Nobody is saying that this is going to like snap our fingers and this is totally going to fix everything that's wrong with you. I know you might actually want the pain gone, emotional or physical, but that's not our goal. We're not trying to fix or suppress or get rid of anything. We're just opening to the possibility that we can experience both pain and pleasure. So let's see what it's like to drop our judgments or the eye rolling that this is too simple to work, or our grumbling that we've tried everything. Let's drop our conditioning and get curious. Pleasure allows us to reconnect with and be embodied, inhabit our bodies. When we pair connecting with our bodies through pleasure instead of pain and suffering, we are repatterning and showing our brains and nervous system that being in the body and feeling are safe. So if connecting to your body and feeling sensations in your body is difficult, or you find it confusing, or like you're not doing it right, or something like that, I can almost guarantee you it's because you have some expectation of what it's supposed to look like and what you're supposed to feel, or that you have all of this fear about the bad stuff you're experiencing, and you haven't given yourself permission to be like, okay, I'm just not going to focus on the bad. I'm just going to focus on pleasure for right now. I'm going to find ways to connect with my body and to feel sensation in my body through pleasurable experiences and not just painful experiences. So if your pattern with your body is constant stress response and nervous system activation because you're so worried about and focused on your pain and symptoms, of course you don't want to be in your body, embodied. And this can be repatterned through pleasure. So if we're only ever focused on pain, our relationships with our body is a painful relationship. If we can start to invite in more pleasure, we can start to balance our relationships with our bodies so that it's not only pain focused. Let's stop trying to go so deeply into our pain, which includes understanding your pain, fixing your pain, talking about your pain, when we haven't actually connected with our bodies through pleasure. When pleasure becomes safe, we can gradually introduce noticing and feeling pain, and it can become safe too. And if the pain is psychosomatic, it's possible that it may reduce or resolve on its own because it was simply there to get your attention to reunite you with your body. It really can be that simple. So as you're noticing, it may be helpful to remind yourself of what overcoming health anxiety, relationship anxiety, money anxiety actually means. And it's not having a symptom-free existence. It's not having a perfect relationship or no relationship. It's not having tons of money or no money. You are overcoming health anxiety if you are changing, even slowly, the energy with which you approach your healthcare. So if you're going from panic and urgent to grounded and calm, even slightly, you're repatterning that. If you are changing the way you relate to money, you're repatterning money anxiety. You're overcoming health anxiety if you're checking in less with your body, or if you're checking in less with your relationship, or if you're checking in less on your bank account. You're overcoming health anxiety if you're confronting your resistance, your stories, and your attachments to health, to symptoms, to the hamster wheel of wellness. You're overcoming it if you're relating with your body with more pleasure, just as much, if not more, than with pain. If you're aware of how you've imposed perfectionism on your body, that your health anxiety is actually perfectionism. It's like, no, you're not perfect. We're gonna have to keep focusing on this and working on this until it's perfect. You're accepting whatever is present in your body without resistance, even if what you feel is really uncomfortable. And your window of tolerance for pain and discomfort is widening. All of those are great ways to tell if you're overcoming health anxiety, even if it just feels slight. Okay, we've made it to the end of our workshop. I know this was a long one, but it's one of my favorites. So let's take another break. We'll do 5 minutes. We'll come back at 50 after the hour.